You tested.
Hello.
You got two things here.
This is Leona Jane Barbara. Leona Jane Barbara Knashinska.
This is Labor Day. This is September the 3rd, 1990. And I'm at 2010 Lincoln Way West, which is the big old manse on Lincoln Way that Wally, that's Walter McKnight, and I, the podiatrist, foot surgeon, husband, father, grandfather, live. And it's a magnificent day of summer, even though it is going into the fall now. It's sweet and mild, and all the sky is blue. There are a few summer sounds outdoors. Somebody's playing a trumpet, of all things. It must be the neighbor boy, Brendan Curtis. I gave you my name before. It was a long one. Leona Jane was my given name. Barbara was my confirmation name. Knashinska was the name of my grandmother on the maternal side, and that was Mariana Knashinska, who married Frank Wiginka. That was my grandfather, and they were both from Poland. In fact, they'd had a child there, a baby called Mary, but she had died. And Joseph, who also died in Poland, they came here. Then my paternal grandparents were Salomea and Frank Bartoszek. That's spelled Bartoszek. And they were the parents of my daddy. His name was Ziggy. Stood for Zygmunt. And finally they called him Sidney. And that's where my name derived from. Then I was named Bartoszek, of course. And then I married McKnight. I had two children. One was named Melanie. She was the elder. And then there was Scott. They were 7 years apart. And they're wonderful children. And in the early days, I remember well living at Grandma's house. Grandma Wiginka used to call her Busha, and that's Grandma in Polish. And she was the sweetest little thing that ever lived. She was kind of on the short side and had this sweet, creamy complexion, soft, and she was so lovable. Grandpa was very tall, and he had a handlebar mustache, and in those days that was quite the fashion. When I say those days, it must have been that they came here at the turn of the century, which would have been about close to, I believe it was 1895, because some of the clothes that were worn of a picture we have of Grandma and Grandpa Wiginka. Grandma wore a long dress and Grandpa wore a very stiff high collared shirt. And they lived at 1125 West Napier Street. And we moved in and out of there. It's when my daddy had a job, or if he was in business, and when he went out of business or something failed, why, we moved back to Grandma's house at 1125. I have a picture and some negatives of the old homestead. It was a sweet little home. We had a basement where we kept all our vegetables, cabbage, potatoes. No refrigeration in those days to speak of, you see, unless we bought the ice from the iceman, who did deliver oftentimes at a side, at a door that was built into the home. He would just slide the ice in there, and we'd put it in the ice box, which was a wooden thing, and it could hold 25 to 100 pounds. Would last 2 or 3 days, and then we'd put a card in the window again for the iceman, so he could cometh and bring us our ice and keep our food cold. But the basement, mostly in the summertime, was where the goodies were stored. There were grapes in the grape arbor, which was out back, and Grandma and the rest of us would make grape jam, and Grandpa would make wine in the basement. And these were days that everything seemed to come in bulk. You went to the store and you could pick out and weigh how many pounds of this and how many pounds of that you wanted. And it was a fun time. It was hard work for everyone because you didn't have these big wash machines. You had to boil water and then in the boiling of that water, you had to take that with a big copper basin-like and put it in your sink and then do the washing. And there were some old-fashioned wringers at the time, which were, of course, manual. You wrang out your clothes, but you hung them. You hung them up to dry. And, of course, Monday was wash day in those days. Tuesday was ironing day. And we always had a lot of laundry. And as we were growing, there was always housework of some nature to do. I wanted to make sure to make mention of the scrub boards we used to have. They were just wooden frame things that, they were some type of metal in between. It looked like pleated metal. And you'd take a big bar of this brown soap we used to use and take the garment, wet it, and rub it with this soap and then just scrub it on the scrub board up and down until the spots came out. And you'd wring by hand and then you'd rinse and then you'd wring by hand again. And of course in the wintertime we hung clothes in the basement. Well, 1125 was a busy place because Uncle Burley lived there. He lived in the front bedroom, which used to be the parlor. It had a beautiful French settee in there. But then, him being the bachelor and living at home, why, Grandma did convert that. And we had a pot-bellied stove in the next room, which was a living room, comprised of, say, three or four chairs or rockers, and a library table that was up against a double set of windows. And across from that was the one and only bedroom downstairs. It had a curtain drawn across the frame. And Grandma had one great big cozy full size bed in there, and it had a great big feather bed on it. It was called a pigeonna, and this meant it was all made of ticking and had all these feathers in it. And I believe they were down from a duck. And on cozy nights when there wasn't too much heat, when the fire was dying down in the living room from the pot-belly stove, while Grandma would get the hot water bottles out and she'd tuck them in under that piscina, and boy, we'd go to bed just as sound as a dollar. It was really something to stay at Grandma's house. She really made us comfortable. Now, my parents had the upstairs, and that had been enlarged. We had a stairway leading out of the dining room, which was just, this was north of the living room, and it was a lovely dining room. I still have the china cabinet that stood in there, and there was a doorway, and here's, you open that doorway, and here were the steps to the side of them, and you'd jump up on one of those steps, and before you knew it, you were upstairs, and there was a little, what we call a shunka up there. It was a little hallway, and then you had a door, and you walk into this good-sized kitchen. It was a kitchen and a dining room combined, and on the right was a bathroom, and next to that was a huge pantry room, and that's always handy to put our food in. And then we'd walk, say, south of, to the other room, which was a little enclosure, and right down there was steps again to go down to the lower part of the house where Grandma's bedroom was off to the left, and the kitchen, her kitchen was to the right. And there were three bedrooms up in that upstairs area. Downstairs in the kitchen, Grandma had one of these huge black stoves that that you'd put coal in, and that's how you did your cooking. You'd open up this round cover, and you had a little handle. It poked into a little hole there, and you open up this this cover, and you look down, and then that's where you put all the newspapers and coal and so on, and then your entire stove would heat up from that. You could do the cooking on it and keep the room warm at the same time. And upstairs also, as it was one of the bedrooms that had a window that led out to a porch, a roof rather, and just below that was a porch, a long porch, and that was the custom in those days to have long porches. People used to sit on them just enjoy themselves with conversation and so on. Well, this bedroom that had the window out to the roof, a set of twins, which I knew and loved dearly because I was one of them. We were about 1 year old. We got up on that porch. I was born a twin. I don't know if I previously mentioned that, but her name was Loretta Marie. She was the sweetest, darlingest person you'd ever want to know. She loved everybody. She was pleasant to everyone, and she just had a beautiful nature. Well, she and I, scamps that we were, got onto this roof, and it just happened. Uncle Burley, the one who was the bachelor, my mother's brother, he happened to be coming down the alley, which was about 100 feet across the street and going south between two houses, and he looked up and saw us kids up on that roof. Well, did he ever raise Cain? He ran down that alley as fast as he could, got into the house, and he screamed, "The twins are on the roof! The twins are on the roof!" Well, at the time, Uncle Walter was there, and fortunately, he heard this screaming and carrying on, and he ran over upstairs. He ran over to that window, and he says, "Twins, come on, I've got something for you. I've got some candy. Come on in." And he was terrorized that we would run the other way. But we thought, well, that sounds pretty good. Let's go in the house and get some candy. We got to the window and just grabbed us with all his might and pulled us in that window. And I don't think that window was ever opened again while we were little. But we had brothers and sisters, and we were very happy here at Grandma's. We had Brother John, who came along. He was the next one in line to be born. And then there was Aunt Lucy. She was Lucille Rose. She was gorgeous. She had black hair, just jet black hair when she was born, but later on in life it turned blonde, and she got to be a television celebrity and a ballet dancer, and she married a young man named Cornelius Joseph Hogan. She lives in California now with her family, but Connie had died when he was quite young. He died of a heart attack, and it was really sad because Aunt Lucy had two children, Neil and Kathy, and she had just delivered these twins, and one weighed about a pound and the other weighed a pound and a half, and she couldn't even bring them home from the hospital when her husband died. He was only 28 years old. It was so sad. It was a terrible catastrophe. But we had many of those in the family, and we moved from Grandma's house. We went over to Laurel Street, 128 Laurel, which is a beautiful home now that some people that are living there are getting into trouble, but the whole neighborhood there is kind of gone to the dogs, you might say. But in that house, 1125, my grandparents had brought up six children. There was Uncle Walter, and there was Uncle Sally. And then there was my mother, Sophie, and there was Aunt Carrie. And I also wanted to mention that my grandmother had a young boy who was the news of which I knew. He was 18 at the time. He was a sweet-looking child with blonde hair and blue eyes, and he'd worked at Studebaker's, and he got something in his eye, and eventually lost it. And that was another tragedy in the family that nobody could ever explain. But when he had had this terrible accident, why, somebody told Grandma to go to Chicago and sue Studebaker's and see if she'd get some money for this tragedy. And when she came back, it wasn't a day or two that Uncle Vincent had disappeared. And from then on, the family had not heard from him ever again. And that was so sad, because Grandma loved him so dearly. Everybody did. He was just a sweet young man who was getting a start in life, but nobody ever heard from him again. And Sister Columba, who was 96 today, she was a cousin, and she said that somebody must have hurt him or took him away and done him in. Perhaps Studebaker did that, because he would come home. He had home ties that he couldn't break, and he loved his family. I wouldn't be at all surprised if my grandparents, Aunt Mariana and Frank, might have brought a child across the ocean from Europe, because I know Grandma's niece did. Her name was Mrs. Radecki, and her son had a wonderful art gallery here in town. And it's, in fact, he's passed on now, but the family has the art gallery. And he might have, and his sister was born in Poland and came over in a wicker basket. And that was fascinating, because this Radecki, who was the niece, Grandma's niece, and I think probably it was Grandma's sister's daughter. You had to be a sponsor here for people who came over, you see. And my grandma and another relative were sponsors for that niece to come over here. And she brought that baby in the wicker basket and in the hold of a ship. And there were thousands of people there. They all came to New York, you see, first off. And now I understand they're going to have a monument there. And this island where everybody came in, they're going to have a dedication and preserve it and make it into a place of good history, because so many immigrants came from all over the European map that came and settled with their children here. My mother was born in 1902, and she was a very tall and stately-looking woman. And she wore these gorgeous big hats, and Grandma and she used to buy all their hats at a wonderful store named Wyman's downtown on Michigan Street. And in fact, it was next door to another wonderful and very exclusive place called Ellsworth's. It was always cost a little more to buy at Ellsworth's than Wyman's. But they were fashion plates, and when they went down Napier Street to church, why, people would look out the window and see how nicely they were dressed. And they dressed us very well, too. If Mother couldn't buy both our outfits, why, then Grandma bought the other. But I can remember these gorgeous little navy blue suits we had. Straight skirt and the jackets were plaid, blue and gray, with a great big bow in the front, and they were kind of like an artist's smock, you see, with full sleeves and fullness in the jacket itself. And then we wore some little navy blue tams that went with that, and oh my, the heads really did turn when we went to church in those outfits. We wore several different things that were other colors, since we couldn't always dress alike. Sometimes there just wouldn't two things alike, but I can remember these gorgeous, what they call tuxedo coats, with the fur, fox fur that went down the front and across the collar. They were straight coats, and you didn't have buttons or anything, but I remember mine was gorgeous red, and it had a black fur going down the front. My sister had kind of a green, a little darkish green, and she had the black fur going down the front. And they were really attention getters. We didn't dress to get attention. We just dressed because, just alike, because we were twins. And every Easter we had a nice new outfit on. And in those days, that's what you did. You wore an Easter bonnet. You went to church. You came home and you had ham and eggs and homemade coffee cake and sausage, Polish sausage. Oh, it makes my mouth water. Always had horseradish on the table or mustard and Easter baskets, which the Easter bunny in the guise of my grandma and my mother. And grandpa had something to do with that, I'm sure. We always had plenty to eat because grandma would see to that. She used to make a dish called kvass, K-W-A-S. My, that was tasty. It had beets in it and had meat and these great big dumplings. And we just thought she was the best cook in the world. In fact, she used to have sauerkraut in her basement in barrels. You know, you'd pack it in a big barrel and then you'd set a big kind of a board on top, and then a rock would hold that board down so it would pack down nicely. And we eat that all winter long after it was prepared and put down there. And we used to make these wonderful mashed potatoes and just put that sauerkraut on top. And usually we had, well, maybe pig's feet, but pork and something to go with that. It was so good. And I remember all those wonderful potato pancakes my grandma and mom used to flap and serve with maple syrup. And just the different things we had at Christmas, too. We always had a plotki, which is an unleavened bread that we would share. That was so nice. We would break a piece of this bread even before we ate a bite of food. And then on Christmas Eve, now, you know, we never ate meat. It was only fish because we fasted for our Christmas morning communion. And Grandma would make some of the best fish soup, too. She sure had the greatest recipes, I'm sure. They came over from Poland with a book of recipes, unless it was all in their heads then. And she knew all these butchers over on Western Avenue, knew where to get the meat fresh. And we always had tummies full. We never went without. Oh, we were skinny, but that was our nature. Aunt Carrie was my mama's sister, her only sister, and she was so sweet. They used to call her Kashka. And she married Joseph Naporowski, who had a sister, and her name was Blanche. And Blanche married Uncle Walter, Aunt Carrie's brother. And Aunt Blanche, she had a house right next door to Aunt Carrie, and they all raised their children there. And Aunt Carrie, she had a boy named Eddie. Eddie was the sweetest kid you'd ever want to know. He was always our age. He'd come over and play with us, and we'd run around. And on Dingo's Day, he and Cousin Bobby, who was Uncle Wally's boy, they would always bring these switches to switch our legs, because Dingo's Day was regarded as a day to draw out the evil spirits. So on that Monday after Easter, the boys would chase us and switch our legs. However, the next day, Tuesday, was our turn. So we were allowed to find switches and switch the boys' legs. But oh, those rascals, they did get away. We didn't find them, I don't think, once in 5 years on a Dingo's Day when it was our turn did we ever find them to switch their legs. But they just were faster than grease lightning when it came that Tuesday after that wonderful day of Dingo's. And we celebrated with more sausage, and I believe at that time Grandma would start making the different cookies and good stuff that we like so much as children. Now Aunt Carrie, she also had a daughter named Helen, who married a boy in New York, and
I can't think of his name at the moment. But he was an awful nice man. She lives there now. And then there was Gertie. Gertie married a fella, and she had 8 children. And her name was, at the moment, Gertie's name was Shaw. She married Earl. Earl Shaw, and she had 8 children. She had been in Paris most of his career because he was in the service, and she was a very nice lady. She still lives in South Bend. And then there was Ollie. We called him Ollie, but his name really was Alex. And he lives presently in town here on O'Brien.